G'day everyone, and welcome to A Place to Call Home podcast. I'm your host, Sam Fryer, and in today's episode, we chat to Burke Brandon. Burke has a really interesting story, and some of the things we're going to chat about today are paradigm shifts from when he was at Ag College to owning his own property, managing stations, real estate investing and share investing, and we're also going to talk about milking sheep and running a cheese factory. So there's a lot to fit into this episode, and I really hope you enjoy it. Now, before we jump into this week's podcast, I want to say a massive thank you to this week's podcast partner, Beryl the Brahmin. Now, for those of you who are not in North Queensland and don't know who Beryl the Brahmin is, Beryl is an amazing potty calf who actually went through and survived the 2019 floods. And there is an incredible story, a children's story written about her. Now, the author Sally Webster is an absolute legend, and she does an incredible job bringing this story to life, and it is one that is a bit of a favourite in our household for our kids. So if you don't know who Beryl is, be sure to check her out and buy one of the books, because it's an absolute crack of a story. Once again, please enjoy the episode, and if you do, please take a moment and share it with friends and family, or even leave a bit of a rating. It's the best way that we can keep on growing this podcast, and thank you very much. Thank you very much for joining us on the Place to Call Home podcast. Before we get too far, can you tell me a bit more about yourself? Where do you live and what do you do for a living?
Yeah, so we're on a 200-acre farm here in South Gippsland in Victoria. Myself and my wife, Bronwyn, and our two kids who have now left home, they weren't interested in farming. They've gone on to other pursuits. So we're in a high rainfall zone with some creek flats and hill country, and we're running prime lambs and Speckle Park beef cattle on the property. And earlier this year we finished milking our sheep as well.
Geez, you're a bit of a diverse old farm happening there. And like I said, thanks for jumping on board, because chatting to you previously, your story is really interesting and something a little bit different. So I was excited when you said yes to bring you on board. To give us a bit of a background, did you grow up on the land at all? And can you tell us a bit more about where and how you grew up?
Yeah, so I'm not from a farming family, unless you go back five generations. Grandmother was had a dairy in Brisbane, very close to the centre of Brisbane. But my parents were teachers, and I grew up on a small block in the bush on the Mornington Peninsula, where we built a mud brick house in the bush back in the days when there were no wineries around. It was just all orchard country and a lot of bush. And I spent a lot of time, spent my whole life outside basically. Spent a lot of time with mucking around with horses and dogs. And I think that's where I got the bug for working outside. And I decided pretty early on, I think probably when I was in about year 9 or 10, that I 100% knew that I wanted to be a farmer. I don't know why, but that's just the thought process I had. And once I'd made up my mind, that's my whole vision was based around going to Ag College and learning how to be a farmer, because I had no idea, I had no mentors in it at all. And but I knew that's what I wanted to do.
So you mentioned you grew up in the bush, and you can definitely tell you do have a love for the bush there. And you can't explain where your love for agriculture came from, but what did you do once you did grow up, once you finished school? And did you go straight away to the Ag College, or did you go out and work out on some of the properties?
Well, I'd already touched base with the Glen Ormiston Agricultural College back in the day, before it was Melbourne Uni based and before it was shut down. And I found out from them what I had to do, and you had to have 12 months experience, work experience, as part of the 2-year course, or on top of the 2-year course. So I decided to do that before going and going to uni. So I went out and did 12 months jackarooing in southeast South Australia. Had a family member over that way who knew a few cockies and got lined up a job for me on a big place over there. And I ended up working on a few different properties before I started at uni, finishing on a cattle property up west of Rockhampton, actually, over the summer. So that was a good experience too, doing all the calf marking on horseback. That was right up my alley. And so by the time I got to college, I felt that I had half an idea what went on a place and where I wanted to focus my learning on. And so that prompted me to sign up for the wool classing certificate at college. That's what I specialised in was wool classing. Got my ticket for that. And because I just found that I liked working with wool.
One thing you mentioned previously when we were chatting, you said that there were some of these paradigms that were kind of put on you throughout university and stuff like that. And I know we're probably going to touch a bit more on it later on when we are talking about your diversified farm there. But can you just explain to us some of those things that you learnt in uni that you wasn't quite true once you got older?
Yeah, the college was pretty heavy on farm management, and we spent a lot of our time focused around business management, and it was drummed into us pretty hard the economies of scale, and that you know this is back in the early 90s, and the common message was get big or get out and be efficient. And so we were told as a rough rule of thumb that we needed 10,000 DSE equivalents per labour unit to have a viable farm. And so, if you're on your own, you basically need to be running 10,000 wethers or an awful lot of cattle. And that was sort of, and to run that, working backwards on stocking rate, you're looking at quite a bit of land. And if you were then going to employ staff, then you need to be running an extra 10,000 DSE for each staff unit that you have. So I quickly discovered that not coming from a farming family, that 1,000 acres plus property was never going to be within my reach, or so I thought. And so I pretty much gave up on the idea of having a property that size and decided the only way to do it was to manage farms for other people, which is what the course was training us to do.
Thank you for bringing that up, Burke. I think it's important for those of us going through university and ag colleges. Sometimes, I'm not saying it's entirely incorrect, but sometimes that's by having these conversations like that to young people, it throws them off to the journey towards working towards land ownership because they don't think they'll never have the capital required to actually take on that large size of investment. And I think that's why it's important to tell your story and people like your stories is because you've done something differently and you've actually achieved it being a full-time producer. And touching on that land ownership journey, after you finished out and you're managing country and stuff like that and other properties, you were asked to come back into the family cheesemaking business. I just want to touch on how did that conversation go and what made you shift from managing properties to working back in the family business?
I think it was largely around the right question at the right time, around timing. And I'd sort of had enough of doing things someone else's way. I was always had aspirations of my own of how I thought I wanted to farm. And at the time we had young kids and to be honest, I was starting to struggle physically with the work of running big mobs of cattle and sheep through the yards all the time. And so when I was presented with an opportunity to have a bit of a career change and learn cheese making from my father, we decided to take it up and move the family over closer to all their grandparents and have a different kind of pace of life.
Around that same time, Burke, you also bought a little block just in the area when you did move home. What was the process of that, and how did you go about having the capital and enough financial there to actually do that? Did you do some off farm investing, like some share investing, or did you just save up to buy that little block? What was the process for you?
Yeah, we've always been good at saving, living and working out on farms. It's pretty easy to save if you try. I mean, I was saving when I was a jackaroo earning $130 a week. But just because you don't have any costs, you know, you eat farm meat and you don't sort of have time to go too far. And your housing's provided as part of the job, and that was one of our biggest savings is not paying rent in the jobs we had. And so just little by little over time, we saved up enough for a deposit on a 9-acre property on the Mornington Peninsula, which was one of the lower value areas of the peninsula. So we basically modified our expectations of what we could afford to what money we could borrow, but we borrowed as much as we could to get that, which turned out to be a good move because when we sold it 10 years later, looking to buy a bigger farm, it had gone up twice its value and it provided a deposit for the next place.
Can you touch a bit on some of the share investing that you did throughout that period to try and grow that wealth, that asset? And were you using like a share advisor, or were you purely just investing in blue chip shares, or what was your strategy behind your share investing?
Yeah, a bit of both between blue chip and advisory speculative investments. Most of them didn't work out, but they say time in the market's more important than timing the market, and that's sort of worked for me. Started investing as a kid. My weekend work at local orchards, that all went into savings. And when I was 20, I think, at that, I used to buy my first ute and then started saving again. And those shares, yeah, 10 years later went to buying our first property, or a deposit at least for the first property. Yeah, we kind of started falling off the wagon a bit with investing because we didn't put enough effort into researching where the best places for investing were. So it was probably good timing for us to get out of it and invest in property in the end. But it certainly helped someone starting with nothing, just putting $1,000 in here and there to investments to building up over time. And the timing was also good because back in the day when we were earning 17% interest on deposits, you couldn't lose. So, that helped as well. And pretty much our property investments have all been at the from the start of the property boom, I think, in the last 20 years.
It's a wild old time. Thinking of that, those high interest rates that you said that you had your savings in, you know, probably a bit of a scary thought thinking of it going back that way again with some of the debt leverage that people have these days. Getting back onto the property, you started mucking around with milking sheep around the time that you bought that little block. And why did you decide to try that? And how much did value adding impact the decision to one day aim for that bigger property?
Well, we never intended on milking sheep. We hadn't even thought about it early on. But despite getting out of farming, I couldn't I couldn't not run a few sheep. So we took a couple of dozen sheep with us, crossbred sheep with us from the bigger farm onto the hobby farm, and I just kept them for our own meat purposes. And a few years after starting cheese making, realized that we were at kind of a high risk situation where we weren't in control of our supplies very well. So we were having trouble actually sourcing and buying milk from other producers. And I thought, well, maybe we should start milking our own animals, not really knowing. You just assume, oh, we might get some goats or some cows or something and start milking them. And I thought, well, what can we do that's different to what everyone else is doing? Just about nobody's milking sheep. And I've got sheep. I know sheep. I can't stand goats. So it seemed the obvious choice is to try milking these sheep that we had, which we did do, and started with one sheep that lost a lamb and made a bit of cheese out of it, and suddenly realized how amazing milk was for cheese making. So I thought, right, this is the way we've got to go. So we've got some milking sheep genetics in and cross that with our meat sheep. And over the years, we gradually selected our lines and genetics to breed the sheep we were looking for. For the traits for milking. And yeah, we pretty much for about 3 years we mucked around learning how to milk sheep because we had no idea. It was a pretty steep learning curve, all the problems that go with lactating animals, and developing recipes for the cheese and all those things. But we did eventually, we ended up milking very intensively, running about 40 sheep on 9 acres, but we're actually using a lot of land around the area that was sort of basically going as free lease from people who owned land and didn't know how to run animals on it or anything. So we had use of a few paddocks to expand our area that way. And we also started feeding the sheep with sprouted grains as well. We had a little fodder factory brought down from Queensland to sprout barley, and that boosted our digestibility, our stocking rate, and the length of our growing season. It was all really good, but very intensive, and we started to realise that what we were doing was completely inefficient, certainly a long way from our 10,000 DSC we were supposed to do. But we did feel that we were onto something that a lot of customers wanted, and we were doing something different, and it was all working out well. We were winning awards with our cheese, and so we decided that if we were going forwards, we either had to stop doing it because it was bloody stupid, or do it properly, get a bigger farm, and build up to a more viable farm size or herd size.
Yeah. So you're just going down that route, and I just around the conversation of buying that bigger property, how did you go about looking for or finding that property to run the milk sheep on?
Well, we looked all over Victoria, basically, trying to think of places that we knew a little bit about, a bit of experience. We'd come from the Western District, so we looked out that way. But we had a lot of criteria to consider. We needed to be in a fairly centralised location that was easily accessible, both for supplies and getting our cheese products to the end consumer, and also in a area that could grow grass for milking off. Because if you want to produce milk, you've got to have good nutrition. There's no two ways about it. And so we're looking at some irrigation areas of Victoria, and I didn't really have a lot of experience with irrigation since we're over in the southeast South Australia. We did a bit there But I didn't want to be moving water pipes around the rest of my life. And so we found this spot in South Gippsland. It's kind of a really small pocket of ground that, you know, we've got giant earthworms here for a reason, because the clay loam soil's almost a metre deep, and we seem to get all the weather that's going to come through ends up dropping rain here. So we can grow green grass most of the year round here without any irrigation. So, yeah, we looked around for a few months and sort of tearing our hair out trying to find the perfect property that had all the attributes that we were looking for, and we were starting to run out of time because we'd already sold our other house and we had to move out. So, and then a friend of ours said to us, oh, there's a place down the road from us who's up for sale. It's probably out of your budget, and it well and truly was, but we drove down the driveway and we thought, no, this is the place we've been looking for all these months. It's got the landscape, it's got the natural vegetation we were looking for, everything we were looking for pretty much, except the only problem was it wasn't a sheep farm. It had a dairy on it. That was a plus for us, but we realised that you're never going to find the perfect property that has everything you're looking for unless it's all already set up for doing exactly what you want to do. And that wasn't going to happen. So this is where we ended up, and it all worked out pretty good.
This week's podcast partner is Beryl the Brahmin. Beryl the Brahmin is a homegrown story from northwest Queensland about a potty calf called Beryl. Beryl comes to life and into the homes of little readers through a children's storybook of the same name. She's everyone's favourite potty who epitomises the Aussie underdog, and you can find her book and much more on berylthebrahmin.com.au.
It's a good story. It's an interesting one. And I suppose going to that process of actually buying the property, how did you go about finding the finance for the investment?
Well, I guess we knew how much money we had to invest of our own. And so once we knew what we needed to afford, we spoke to the bank and found out what we could borrow. And it was pretty much at the time we had to have 50% finance as a deposit that they would lend us. And the property we were looking at was about 200 grand over what we could borrow. And we managed to get them down a fair bit. And we had to go up a bit and scratch money from basically borrowed every cent we could scrape together to buy this property and then establish it in a way that we spend money on it to get it going how we needed it. But we chose a property that had a house we could live in, walk straight into the house, not lift a finger on it, focus on our farming, focus on our business. And within 2 weeks, we had the old dairy rebuilt and up and running. And it hadn't been a dairy for 10 years. And the milking pit was concreted over, and we had to cut the concrete out and get it all up to speed again in 2 weeks before lambing started. So it was all down to the wire, but we pulled it off and it all worked out.
Before we go too far down the conversation of what improvements of the infrastructure on the place you had to do, going back to the actual purchasing of the property and the process, you mentioned that you bought that 9 acres, the original house, that original investment. Did you, and you said that you sold that, did you use the funding from that house along with savings to buy the property? And when it went to come to borrowing a bit more money, did you use someone like a mortgage broker as well, or did you just talk straight to the banks? How was that process of borrowing the money? How did that go?
No, we went straight to the bank. I don't know if we really thought about mortgage brokers at the time, but a big issue we had was that most of the banks didn't want to know about us. And we tried going through Rural Bank, And because what we wanted to do was partly manufacturing based, it didn't qualify as a straight farm. And we found that the only ones who would lend us the money or enough money was Bendigo Bank. And so we went with them. It was our only option.
It is it's an easy conversation for like young people going into this direction, and it can be very daunting borrowing that large amount and how to build up the equity so you can purchase a block. And then touching on that, once you actually bought the block, you actually had to do all this infrastructure work, and I'm guessing that you would have to go from a cow dairy to a sheep dairy. Not only did you have to do all the, like you said, bust open the cement in the milk pit and everything like that in the dairy, but you also would have to done refence the whole property. You would have had to change the actual infrastructure in there. How did you actually go about that? Was it just a slow process of as the cash coming, you just kept chipping away at the infrastructure changes? How did those improvements go?
Yeah, that's right. We were just patient about and realistic about what we had money for. We've seen so many businesses go in with grand ideas of what they have to do to start the business and spend heaps of money on this and that and everything else, being top of the range before they've even started trading. And that's where a lot of them fall down, whereas we already had an established cheese business and we had pretty good confidence of what we could earn from that. And it's pretty good cash flow because it was a retail business as well. And even though we were struggling to scrape enough money together to feed the family at the time, we had a fair bit of confidence of cash flow coming in the future. So that's what we relied on to pay the $5,000 mortgage every month and just keep our heads above water. And we used a lot of secondhand, well, our whole dairy was secondhand equipment from old cow dairies. All the gear that was too small for the modern dairy suited us perfectly fine. And so it's just a matter of checking your expectations and having realistic expectations of what you can afford and what you can get away with doing. Yeah, for the first 5 years or so, our sheep pretty much went everywhere. It was a bit of a nightmare. We just focused on fencing the boundary with ring lock as best as we could against wombats digging holes under it and roos knocking it down. But we sort of managed not too bad. And that gradually over time, we would do land care improvements. We put in a new ring lock fence somewhere, and that would segregate a section of the farm off that was more of the farm that was sheep-proof. The other thing we did was when we moved onto the farm, we didn't have many sheep, so we were gradually increasing our herd size. Instead of saying, okay, we need to be milking 200 sheep, you know, we started with 30, and then we bought another 30, I think, and then just built it up through our own breeding program rather than going out and spending $100,000 on buying sheep, which you couldn't buy them anyway because you just can't buy milking sheep around here. And so a lot of our farm was leased out to a neighbouring dairy farmer. So there's a bit of income from that, which helped us get started, but it wasn't very sustainable going forward. So we gradually reclaimed a lot of that land until we had the whole property to ourselves, but it all helped, yeah.
I think that's an interesting conversation, that stepping stone. Like I talked to previous guest Ben Law, Financial Bloke, on one of these episodes, and we talked about that transition period, how, you know, while you're still transitioning, you might need to either keep that part-time income, that business ticking over to help fund the property growth, and even leasing part of the country while you're building up your herd. There's all these different strategies around that. It's making sure that, I suppose, you don't burn the candle at both ends and in the end it all goes up in flame. But it's really interesting that you're mentioning that and talking along the lines of the cheese business. You mentioned on the phone that you also built a cheese factory on the property. Is that true? And why did you go down that route, and how did you go down that route?
We pretty much knew when we bought the property that that's what we were going to have to do in the future. So at the time, we were already making cheese in my parents' cheese factory on the peninsula. And I was actually transporting milk back there three times a week. And so I'd take milk down there. It was about an hour and a half drive. I would stay down there making cheese for a few days straight, and then I'd come home, pick up more milk and head straight back down there again. So Bronwyn was basically raising our two kids and running the dairy by herself for 3 years while we're in that transition stage. So we had a pretty high incentive to build our own factory on the farm and have everything farm-based, which is what we did. After 3 years, we got ahead enough on our mortgage that we could refinance the loan, reborrow as much as we possibly could again, and build a cheese factory on the farm. And that was all while I was absent making cheese elsewhere. So it was a very stressful period, but we pulled it off in 12 months. We got the factory built and in the middle of the empty paddock, and power onto it and approved by the regulators. And part of that process was actually a federal government grant, which for $250,000 for boosting tourism in regional areas. So that enabled us to make the project bigger than what we would have otherwise. We would have just done something really small and minimalist, but enabled us to make it into a tourist attraction as well, which definitely helped our income into the future, having that business as well, because we're pretty well located for tourism. We're only about 20 k's from the coast here, about an hour from Melbourne. So it's very kind of centralised for people travelling down the coast on holidays to call in and have cheese platters and that sort of thing. So, that helped a lot too.
What was the decision-making process of nearly paying off the property and then going back again to the banks, borrowing money, leveraging up to build the factory? Was it just the time that was going into going away, taking it to your parents' factory, or was it, what was that process of deciding to make that next move?
I think we just knew that we had to do it. It's something we wanted to do, because not only was it unsustainable being on the road all the time, that was an essential part of getting established, because we had use of facilities, we could continue the business, but it wasn't sustainable long term. And we did a lot of things around focusing on the business and 100% guaranteeing that the business would succeed. We did a lot of things that we made a lot of choices that we probably shouldn't have around doing whatever it takes to succeed at the cost of family and your own sustainability in workload. And so having everything home-based was a good solution to that. In some ways it was good, because 100% of our time could be focused on at home. But as a detraction, because it's at home, you end up working 100 hours a week and don't take any time off. But we also wanted to do our own thing as well, and try and kind of separate what we were doing to what my parents were doing. You know, you just want to be able to do your own thing and do it your way. And as we had more experience and more idea of what we wanted to do, then we just felt the time was right for us to go out of our comfort zone and take the next step to do it ourselves.
Now, Burke, I am aware that you're probably a bit older than most of my demographic that have been on the podcast previously. So this next lot of conversation is really about that kind of stepping back, because throughout the phone call, you mentioned that you actually went to building the business and the cheese business, but then you actually have sold the cheese business, is that correct? And now you're focusing more on the property. What made you step away from owning the cheese business, and what was those steps like to step out of it?
Yeah, so a little over 12 months ago, we sold the business to our dairy farmer who was supplying some milk to us. And it's something we had thought a bit about through COVID, I suppose, when things really slowed down a lot. But mainly around our physical health, the problems I had leaving farming originally started to get highlighted as I got older, and it's a very repetitive physical work that we do with both milking and cheese making, and after too many times falling off horses and motorbikes, I think, caused the trouble, and it's eventually caught up with me, and so I've had a few surgeries and that. And so when someone showed interest in buying the business, well, I thought, well, why not? Someone wanted to buy it, so why not sell it? And it's worked out pretty good. So we're still involved in the cheese business. I'm there as a cheese maker. We're still living in our house at home while renting out the cheese making factory. And so we've still owned the farm and still got used to the farm. And finally, after all these years, I'm able to just focus on farming instead of trying to do everything. And so it's working out really well for us. We've got the rental income, I've got cheese making income, and a bit of meat sales.
What has that meant for you, a bit of a holistic view of yourself and the property, taking that step back now and a bit of a transition period that you're in?
Yeah, I reckon it's pretty good actually getting to have enough time to enjoy the property and enjoy it for the reasons I wanted to get into farming in the first place, and having enough time to run the farm properly. Because when you're working off farm, which is effectively what our cheese factory was, the farm just becomes part-time. We were getting milking done at dawn in the morning, and then once milking was over, we'd give it a hose down and just walk out and go up to the cheese factory and not think about the farm for the rest of the day until milking later in the afternoon. So now I've got a bit more time. I'm focusing on my grazing more. We actually became certified organic 2 years ago, and so we're using a lot of more grazing techniques, high density grazing techniques, and long rest periods to try and control worm burdens better. So we're able to farm organically, and I'm finding that really interesting, the regenerative farming side of things, and it's helping with our marketing of our meat as well, which is our we've changed our breeding a bit to produce better lambs, and we're able to market them organically and get a premium in a time when the market's pretty shit.
Mark, I always wrap up my episodes with a couple of questions, and first off, have you done any schools that you would recommend people attend, or workshops or anything like that that have really benefited you in the business?
Not really. I'm pretty much self-taught, or just been observant of what I hear and see around the place. But most of my education has actually been through Landcare Australia, really getting into more than just planting trees these days, and I've learned a lot from other people, just having field days and having experts come out and talk about different things that you've never thought about before. But yes, there are a lot of opportunities out there now for holistic farming style that there's a lot of smart people to learn from.
I just agree, and it's something I think everyone should be passionate about, that regenerative agriculture, because, you know, we only get one crack at this, And we've got to look after the land that we do manage. Do you have a mentor that has helped you along your journey? And if so, what part have they played?
Yeah, not really. I've had a few people along the way. One particular a guru of organics, which I learnt a lot from years before changing our farm to organic. He's called Ron Smith, an old dairy farmer. But no, I've pretty much done my own thing.
One last question is, what is your one piece of advice that you'd have for someone starting out on their journey towards land ownership?
Actually, I would say someone starting out in farming is to look after yourself and stay healthy physically and mentally, and also set up your operation to be sustainable for your family as well. You know, you can, on a farm, you can spend countless hours out in the paddock working, and at the end of the day, you know, what's it for? You've got to have a strong family to come home to. And so I'd say just think about not just your sustainability of your land, but your sustainability of your business operation is really important.
100%. I think along those lines also is that work-life balance. It's a hard one to achieve at times, but especially with kids, you know, you only get one crack at raising children. And I know everyone's trying to get ahead and have a bit of a crack, but also you've just got to have that work-life balance in life. Yeah.
Yeah, you need to be there for your kids, that's for sure.
Look, Burke, thank you very much for jumping on the Place to Call Home podcast. It's been a really cool chat and one that's really has been really fascinating, interesting for myself. So thank you very much for your time today.
No worries. Thanks a lot, Sam.
Thank you very much for listening to another episode of A Place to Call Home podcast. And if you did enjoy the episode, please take a moment to rate the episode on your podcast player, whether it's Apple or Spotify or Google Podcasts, and share it with friends and family. Word of mouth is the best way to get the word out there about what we're doing, and it helps the podcast grow and it helps me continue doing this. So if you can take a moment to do that, I'd greatly appreciate it. Now, for the quote of the day, I want to leave you with one with Nelson Mandela. And he says, "It always seems impossible until it is done." Have a good day.